at Soccer Bello. This is FieldPod.com, the week in Georgia in English, coming to you from our studios high atop Tbilisi's damp and wet Rustaveli Avenue. Today is Thursday, the 9th of May, 2013. Victory Day. On this day in 1920, the Polish army celebrates its capture of Kiev with a victory parade on Krzyżak. 1936, Italy formally annexes Ethiopia after taking the capital Addis Ababa on May 5th. 1945, VE or Victory Day in the Second World War, so today is a holiday in Georgia and everywhere else in the former Soviet Union. 1950, L. Ron Hubbard publishes Dianetics. 1955, West Germany joins NATO. 1960, the FDA in the United States approves the pill. 1974, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee opens impeachment hearings against Nixon. 1979, Iranian Jewish businessman Habib Elghanian is executed in Tehran, prompting the mass exodus of the once 100,000-member-strong Jewish community of Iran. 1992, Armenian forces capture Shusha, marking a major turning point in the Karabakh War. 1997, Bill Clinton appoints former prisoner of war's ambassador to Vietnam. 2004, Chechen President Ahmad Kadyrov is killed by a landmine under a VIP stage during a World War II memorial victory parade in Grozny, Chechnya.
In the football stadium, mm-hmm. Right?
That being the right. The dad of the
current guy.
Current goon. Birthdays today are John Brown, the anti-slavery fighter, José Ortega y Gasset, Spanish philosopher, actors Candace Bergen, Rosario Dawson, and Albert Finney. We are Matthias Hooter, visiting scholar Will Dunbar, and me, Mark Mullen. Nothing we say can be connected with any of our employers, past, present, and future. Cameron is not here today. Thanks again for those posts on our forum. Some great comments on the medical students and on Will particularly. Definitely check those out. And me saying, you know, too much. To comment or ask for an opinion or follow up on something.
Or just be mean about people.
Or just be mean, you know, insulting and whatever. We're okay with that. We won't pull it, probably. Go to tbilpod.com or send us an email at tbilpod@gmail.com. We're interviewing ministers, other notables, so keep the questions coming. We had some great ones for Archil Gegeshidze, who is Georgia's ambassador to Washington, left yesterday, and those are up on the right-hand side. If you take a look, yesterday interviewed Irakli Alassania, had some great questions via Twitter. So we'll be talking to health and agriculture and a few others, so... Anything anybody wants to know, let us know. My Georgian Journal and Kvitis Politra column this week is about the Patriarch's Easter comments on abortion. Talked a little bit about sex selection and contraception education in Georgia and a few other things. Sure to elicit a great number of responses from Kvitis Politra readers. On May 1st, employees of the Ministry of Internal Affairs detailed Omar Tedoradze, head of the Department of the Ministry of Agriculture, Zaza Makoreblidze, the director of the Institute of Mechanization of the Agriculture Ministry, Vaja Nakurishvili, the director of the Mechanizatori Limited Liability Company, and his deputies Mamuka Ivanidze and Beso Tevzadze, as well as Otar Karchava, professor at the Agricultural University. All are detained and are accused of negligence and embezzling state funds this past January. 54 million lari was allocated to develop Georgian agriculture, and 2 million lari of this sum was misappropriated. On May 2nd, Agriculture Minister Dato Kirbalidze asked BI to...
As predicted
by tbilpod.com right here, asked BI to suspend him as minister pending... the investigation into the arrested officials. Deputy Agriculture Minister Shalva Pipia is now acting Agriculture Minister. On Monday, BI said that Kirbalidze asked him to stop investigating the ministry's alleged embezzlement of state funds. The acting minister defended Kirbalidze, who he claims was not asking that the investigation be stopped, only stating that his concerns about the details of the investigation in the hopes that it wouldn't find very much. No, not really. But there's some little inside stuff going on in there.
Well, I heard that, it was perhaps one of the reasons was it was some of BI's own money, which he had donated via the disaster fund, which had gone missing, which was why there was such, interest in this case. And I also saw Kaladze, I mean, I'm not, that's completely unconfirmed, by the way. I also saw that Kaladze said, that's the energy minister and footballing legend, Kaladze, who said that that Kibelidze could come back, maybe, after the investigation, which would be interesting, and hopefully probably won't happen, but still.
You think? Why?
Well, I mean, I just think that once you've got your copybook like that, you're probably, your ministerial career should probably justifiably be over. But, I wouldn't say that's a hard and fast rule, but...
Well, maybe he was just being very honourable by, skipping out.
Well, if he was being very honourable, then why did BI a week or 10 days before go, there's one minister I'm really dissatisfied, he's going to have to go, no.
Yeah, that was one of you have betrayed me thing. That was a little weird. But, you know, then again, BI does tend to sort of, shoot his mouth off a bit. But let's hope that somebody gets that figured out. Interesting, the agricultural university connection there. I wonder, they've certainly had their tribulations. On Sunday, the 5th of May, Georgian Orthodox Church celebrated Easter. In his Easter epistle, the Patriarch Ilya II called on Georgian authorities to adopt a law making abortion illegal, to fix the country's, and I quote, grave demographic situation. Ilya II stated, quote, those who do not want to give birth to a child for economic reasons, please do not commit this terrible sin. If you cannot afford raising children, the church will take care of them.
Deeply sensitive on the patriarch's part there. Unwanted pregnancy is only about money, right? I mean, that's all it can ever possibly be about.
Of course. Yeah, and also, I mean, I keep thinking about that operationally, like what that would look like. I think on the one
that would look like a small army of fundamentalist Christians in a site, right. Somewhere in a basement underneath Salamanca Cathedral. It just sounds like some sort of nightmare movie.
I mean, right now the church already runs half of all orphanages, right? Or it used to run half of all orphanages.
But who actually runs the orphanage? Okay, there's a little baby, and then I think about what your typical Georgian priest is like, which is, not to stereotype.
Is he the father? Right now, but, no, I'm sorry.
But big, big, fat beard, on the backside of a little bit of wine, I don't know, like...
But he has a Land Cruiser.
And a Land Cruiser, I just don't see those guys with a bunch of babies.
But on a serious point, this is actually the first time, as we know, for unfortunate legacy post-Soviet reasons, abortion is the primary form of birth control in this country, and women have a disproportionate number of abortions compared to women in the West, especially I think minority women, particularly the Azerbaijani minority in Georgia, have a truly staggering amount of abortions per woman, and this is an unfortunate legacy of the Soviet Union. And we also know from CRRC data that women are in fact the breadwinner in the majority of Georgian households. And so the idea that the church is finally sort of taking on Georgian women who do their own things and make money for their own families in disproportionate numbers compared to the men folk in this country, the idea that the patriarch's finally taking that on, I think that's a fight he can't win. And I really did think that the government statement in response to this was completely cool, actually, which is, no, we're not going to pass a law like that. We are looking at a law banning sex-selective abortion, which was a recommendation from the Council of Europe and various other people. And that would be a completely legitimate thing to do.
Yeah, BI said that the ban on abortion cannot solve the demographic problem, which is ultimately a problem of economic development, and I think there's some reason behind that. Committee on Health and Social Affairs in Parliament will discuss the initiative, but Committee Chairman Dmitry Kundadze said that selective abortion should be banned. I think also Tsoulikiani said something about that. Now, the numbers are that normally 105 boys are born per 100 girls, but in Georgia it's 111. And the South Caucasus countries, are along with India, China, and Pakistan, are the places that have significant sort of sex selective abortion issues. Also, interestingly, the real spike in the number of abortions show up when women have had one or especially two daughters. And so that's the big number. So it does seem to be fairly clear that it is it's couples wanting sons. Boy.
Well, I mean, all I can say is thank God that Kobet Davidishvili's law banning condoms near schools got through, because I mean that's the way to solve the demographic crisis right there.
Is it implemented though?
I don't know. I mean, I don't buy enough condoms clearly, but unfortunately, but I think the patriarch has kind of. Not that I want to take on the patriarch, but I think he's kind of overstepped the mark with this one, and I think this is going to be, you know.
The big question is what, you know, is he going to fight it? I mean, my assessment is that, you know, since it's all about semi-informed predictions here, is that it's just there's no way. Like, there's not that the patriarch is too political, and it's really the whole church is is about. Accommodation, you know, keeping the funds flowing through the system more than it is about picking some kind of fight like this. And really, in the end, just like in the United States, you know, when men start talking about abortion, they're not really talking about saving lives. You know, they're talking about something else. And so I don't think it's gonna happen. Yesterday, Member of Parliament Eliso Chapidze stated that the Georgian Dream is discussing potential presidential candidates, which include Salome Zurabashvili, Vakhtang Kmaladze, Armaz Akhledyani, and Kahi Kaladze.
Oh, I don't think she said that. I think she said that they were discussing five potential candidates, and I think the rumor then bubbled up that it was those five names. She didn't mention those five names.
You may be right. And then I think Alassani was also mentioned too. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if anybody officially mentioned any.
That was just an interpressing news rumor, as far as I'm aware.
All right, BI said that the. Candidates of Georgian Dream put forward may be named as early as the beginning of this week, according of UNM MP Misha Machavani. The UNM will hold a primary at the end of this month among no more than five candidates.
One of whom is Gia Baramidze, and that's the only one we know.
Right, but then there's also talk about Dato Bakradze and Vana Medabashvili.
If they were a UNM member, I'd vote for Bakradze probably.
They'll have a television. Machavadiani said they will have television debates among the candidates. They'll be revealed at the end of June, beginning of July. But see, the interesting thing is, I mean, I don't know whether they actually have a plan or whether this is all just a bunch of loose talk. But knowing UNM, they do have a plan, and it might be good for them to put. You know, a way for them to deal with some of their sins of the past and have a conversation to just put forth different candidates and then have somebody, you know, the kinder, gentler UNM like Dato Bakradze, you know, win the argument, and that could be the way that they sort of channel.
But more than that, I think it's very clever on the UNM's part here. I mean, the way that the Georgian Dream have now said they're going to do it, they're not going to even talk to the parliamentary majority on this. It's the political council of the coalition. So it's basically it's a papal conclave. There'll be a white puff of smoke and the presidential candidate will be announced, whereas the UNM are going to do a sort of a relatively transparent primary process, which is going to be shown on TV.
But and who's going to be allowed to vote for the UNM? Like, because
presumably party members.
How many party members do they have?
Not many. Not that many. Georgia has some of the lowest party membership in the world because it still has this.
But if anyone's a member of any party, they're probably a member of the UNM, if you see what I mean.
Well, there's, industrialists and labor.
That could really backfire. I mean, I wonder whether they're going to have some sort of open primary system or special voting. Because, look, I mean, if it's the, you know, I don't know how many members there are, but the few hundred, you know, UNM candidates, I mean, the way parties work here is they're going to vote for whoever they're told for. I mean, their question will be, who am I supposed to vote for so that I can do my duty as a, you know, party soldier? And so, I mean, that in some ways defeats the whole, point.
I mean, you're right. It's interesting how it's going to work. Is there going to be some sort of registration? Are you going to be a registered UNM voter?
Or polling? Might they do just some kind of polling?
Or an online thing?
Yeah. I mean, that could be taken over easily. I mean, yes, it's...
To organize a nationwide, you know, like, open primary for anybody who wants to show up, that's quite expensive, and that's a big thing.
I mean, one problem that the UNM has is, you know, staying in the news, and this could be a very good way for, you know, for a couple of months for them to just, you know, generate a lot of news in the about themselves, which they would have some control over. Last Wednesday, police clashed with protesters in Tbilisi at an International Labor Day rally organized by the student group Laboratory 1918. According to one of the participants at the protest, the Tbilpod favorite Mate Gabsinashvili, the clash began when plainclothes police officers approached the protesters, cursed them out, and attacked them. Several people were arrested but released the same day. Later, Ministry of Internal Affairs released video footage showing protesters defacing buildings and damaging vehicles. Laboratory 1918 members confirmed that they were spray painting walls of various buildings. They added this doesn't give law enforcement the right to use excessive force. Yeah, this is what's interesting about this group is that this is a sort of
kind of a cool student group. The one kind of cool student group. But they're student groups that they spray paint buildings and stuff, which is not particularly appropriate, but whatever, they're kind of cool.
They're the only student group that is not like kind of people with political ambitions who want to show that I want to be a minister in 3 years.
Yeah. Right, yeah. They are a sort of a center-left, group that they're protesting for, labor rights and worker rights. I believe deeply misinformed. Agreeing amazingly with Georgi Margvelashvili, the education minister, deeply misinformed about the labor law. But I mean, it's great that they're
they care about something.
I mean, I have to say that this is a little bit of a storm in a teacup. I mean, where in the world doesn't this sort of thing happen? And no one was seriously
Georgia
hurt.
Up until a few months ago.
What I mean is the response of the police rather than the demonstration itself.
Yeah.
Where in the world doesn't that happen? And the fact that no one was seriously hurt, no one was arrested, people were arrested but then released, no one was sent to prison. I mean, I hate it when I see cops beating up kids. And I've been to some protests myself, and in fact I've been to some Georgian protests myself where there was a severely more danger going on. But obviously this is the first sort of scuffle with a non-political party element, and it's an unpleasant thing to watch. That's obviously true, but I don't think it's a particularly significant event at the same time. What I think is more interesting is what happened this week, which was, I'm sure we're going to talk about the release of the sex tape.
In fact, sex tape featuring two men and one woman was spread around the internet on kvetshebi.com.
Which means balls or eggs.
Yes, this was the only thing on the site until the site was taken down. One of the men on the tape, Georgi Palisashvili, is a Georgian Dream youth activist.
And he, I think, calls himself a journalist.
A few days before the sex tape was released, claimed to have incriminating evidence about the prime minister's advisor, Gia Khukhashvili. On Saturday, Parasashvili demanded the resignation of three top officials as a precondition for his cooperation in an investigation into the sex tape. The officials are Deputy Interior Minister Gela Kvedelidze, Deputy Prosecutor Lasha Natsvlishvili, Gia Khukhashvili. Rumors indicate that Parasashvili was himself a member of the Orthodox Parents Union and took part in anti-gay rights activism.
So there's some gay stuff going on in this video. I haven't actually watched it, but the two men involved are involved in a sex act together.
Parasashvili claims that the video footage released is fake. Interior Minister Irakli Kharabashvili took the case under his personal control. On Saturday, people gathered outside the former parliament and the police to protest this invasion into citizens' private lives. The protests were verbally insulted by young religious people who were bothered that the group was protesting the day before Easter. Four people were detained but were released later that day.
Okay, so there's a few things we haven't mentioned. The first one is that the guy at the center of this sex tape was known for his extreme homophobic stance previously, working for Studio Objective, which is
which is like they're a group of they call themselves journalists, but they host a TV show on the Batumi based Channel 25, which provides a forum for homophobic and nationalist and xenophobic.
Screw you, Muslims, basically, is what they're saying on that show, right?
It's one of the things they're saying.
So this guy is involved in them. So he's a well-known, rabid anti-UNM guy as well, which is interesting.
Yeah, this group has been fairly closely affiliated with the Georgian Dream, and they were the people who, according to the official story, found the torture prison tapes.
Because they're such great journalists. So this guy, he's the sex tape is released. He is saying that Khashvili and the deputy prosecutor general released it because he has evidence regarding some bizarre, dodgy business transaction regarding Khashvili and the former government. So he's trying to weirdly implicate the UNM as well in what's going on here. Now the sex tape was released. When that happened, this whole, what you mentioned about him you know, having preconditions for becoming involved in the, for cooperating with the investigation. Well, he had a press conference where he was waving his Georgian Dream membership card in the air, going, look, this proves I'm Georgian Dream, and saying, I'm sure that Hare Bashvili, the interior minister, has nothing to do with this, and so sort of trying to prove his credentials as a loyal Bidzinist, as it were, which is kind of interesting. And the protest was there's a few UNM people, some prominent ones, like not MPs, but some prominent pro-UNM activists, as well as some regular civil society folk and gay rights activists and so on. And from what I was told by someone that was there, it was only a dozen people. It was one of those protests where there's twice as many journalists as there are participants. From what I was told from what I was there, the police were looking on, observing the protest. One of the major guys who was involved in the scuffle was actually seen talking to the police before. This is all on film. The activists have a film of this. And so when these so-called Christian guys, who, you know, whether they were just random guys or not is difficult to know, but when these so-called Christian guys came and aggressed the group, the police just looked on for the first 10 minutes of this while the cameraman for Tabula TV was punched in the face. And so this is all on film. He's punched in the face. It's not very cool. The police finally step in, separate the sides, and the activists legitimately ask, why aren't you arresting this guy? And the police were making phone calls on their mobiles to presumably their superiors.
Find out whether or not they're supposed to arrest the guy.
Yeah. So the whole thing has a distinct air. I mean, not only does the release of the sex tape, which is, you know, in terms of what the government had pledged to do in terms of privacy, is a really, really bad sign, but also the police's response to what was a very piffling protest, both have some, you know, leave a nasty taste in the mouth.
Yeah. Can we briefly talk about Khukhashvili? I think we haven't discussed him a lot on the podcast, but he's becoming...
Eminence Grise.
Yeah, a figure that is in the center of political debates, I think.
Yeah, Georgia. Appeared last Sunday with one Nina Khatiskatsi on a sort of talk show to talk about. I don't really know what, and I don't know whether that's
only
maybe a permanent show.
Khukhashvili runs, I would speculate, Ivanishvili funded think tank.
Well, a think tank implies there's a group of people. It's a one-man band, let's face it. He was Badri's guy, Badri Petakatishvili's guy back in the day. He was one of the anti-Misha, you know, expertebi, who has an opinion about everything and a fact about nothing. And he's now, has what appears to be a real job, as BI's advisor.
For the past 2 weeks, officially. But since like November, he has presented himself as the problem solver. Mm-hmm. So if you, especially for the business community, so if you want to, if you have a problem with a business because of the UNM was taken away from you, you talk to me, I talk to Bidzina, and we resolve it.
Bidzina's been seen in public with him. I mean, and Bidzina's come out and stated, I believe, that he's a good guy, and he's my advisor, and I respect his views. Yeah.
And yesterday, for example, Khukhashvili came out in public, or 2 days ago, and said, I managed that the government took control again over assets that were owned by Dato Kesarashvili, the former defense minister, and... UNM ally who is now out of the country.
Was that about the advertising company?
That was about Outdoor GE, but also about another asset that was about trade and logistics.
He was proud to have resolved this issue, and this issue is basically an issue about an important company being passed by one bunch of government-affiliated people who probably shouldn't run it in that way to a bunch of new government-affiliated people who probably shouldn't run it in that way. So the fact that he's proud, he's, you know, on the record saying he's proud of it is...
Well, it's also not really clear, and this happened, I remember, in the beginning of 2004 as well, that it's not really clear how much he's actually doing. I mean, did he actually do any of this stuff, or is he just taking credit for it? And a lot of this stuff is being done very quietly, probably by... young prosecutors that nobody's ever heard of that are, you know, going around to national movement people who own businesses and say, you know, look, now's the time to, you know, let's just iron things out here, you know.
That's very true. That, you know, to what extent he actually is doing stuff, but the fact that Bidzina is seen in public with him and the fact that Bidzina has made statements, you know, praising him effectively, indicates that even if he doesn't actually do anything, you know, there's some political backing behind him, and I think this is actually quite dangerous. For Bidzina's part, I think Bidzina might come a cropper over this, because this guy's a dodgy guy. And he says some bad things. So, for instance, in regards to the April 19th UNM rally, he said, like the gays, the UNM are a minority and should have the chance to express themselves. And, you know, it's that sort of veiled homophobia that, you know, has no real place at the top of government, in my view. And that sort of thing is just, it's yeah. just not cool.
But he's one of the prime candidates for, like, state capture. Kind of, like, for doing yeah. what has always been done is, like, oh, there's a nice business. I would like that one.
Yeah.
I will take it.
Yeah, that's... He should be watched. It should also... Let's hope that people who do polling about, you know, personal popularity, like CRC or whoever... will find out exactly what the public thinks of him, because I doubt if his numbers are going up anytime soon. Energy Minister Kaki Kaladze said that he supports diversifying Georgia's energy resources by purchasing more gas from Russia. Misha replied that doing so would amount to a fundamental revision of Georgia's foreign policy and would make the country dependent on Russia.
I think that's a stupid thing of Kaladze to say.
Yeah. Why not from Azerbaijan?
Well, they
I mean,
do.
Like, since Nabucco is not being built.
Turkmenistan.
Anytime soon.
I mean, diversification of energy is probably a good idea. I mean, you know, what if Azerbaijan sort of falls into a big hole one day?
Yeah.
But, you know, Georgia gets some gas from Russia as a transit fee for the north-south gas pipeline, which goes to Armenia. It also has, I think, an option to purchase more if it needs it. But I mean, the Russians have proved themselves not just in Georgia, but all over, you know, Eastern Europe, as being not a terribly reliable partner. And one of Misha's government's greatest achievements was achieving these deals with Azerbaijan about purchasing cheap gas. So obviously they have the Baku-Tbilisi-Erzurum gas pipeline from the Shah Deniz gas field in the Caspian Sea. And part of the deal with that was they get a certain amount of free gas. They negotiated a reduced rate for an extra bit of gas, and the gas in that pipeline is I think, doubled in capacity over the last couple of years when BP upgraded the pumping stations. So, you know, I'm not crediting Misha's genius or anything like that for this, but Georgia has struck a good deal here. And anything that undermines that is really dumb. And regardless of the way Saakashvili phrased this, he has a really good point. And you know, loose talk about buying gas from Russia is not a good idea.
It seems to be pretty loose. It seems to be, you know, hey, we ought to say this. Now, look, if you want to do this, I mean, okay, then what you do is it shows up in some long, boring plan that talks about, you know, the next 10 years of energy diversification in Georgia. And, you know, and then eventually you start talking contracts. But, I mean, just saying we intend to do this at some point in the future and then not really specifying reasons.
Kaladze's response to Misha's statement was actually a lot more reasonable. Well, half reasonable is not really the right word. He also accused Misha of lying, which is stupid. But he did make the point that Georgia imports electricity from Russia in the winter, so why shouldn't it import some gas?
Russia owns the grid in Georgia.
Now, speaking of electricity and gas, I don't know about you guys, but as a bill payer in this fair city, I've noticed a lot more stories about as our visiting scholar would say, dodgy things happening relating to electricity and gas bills, you know, that, you know, people... sort of switching lines electrical meters, and then, you know, and then gas bills, you know, changing significantly, going way up, saying, well, okay, your garbage, you know, is now here,
yeah.
And then this, and it's just, I don't know, it's just, it seems like there's fluctuation.
Back
and there's
to the
a lot
old
of,
ways.
Right, and there's a lot of people saying, I mean, you know, people are now saying that, you know, oh yeah, like I get the, you know, I go to the guy and he, you know, I give him this much, so he lowers my bill by this much, which you would never hear. A year ago or under the old chain. I don't know whether this may be false. This may be promulgated by, you know, anti-Brexiness, you know, the grapevine, whatever else. But I'm curious from our listeners, you know, paying bills for gas and electricity and things like that, if you're hearing weird things about charges and it's varying and doesn't make sense considering usage and that sort of thing.
Well, in terms of electricity, I have a tip. So if you're an electricity bill payer, a business or a private residence, you'll have a... sort of a very significantly locked cabinet somewhere in the public area near you, which will have your meter, which can be read from the outside. And you can also see underneath the numbers, which twist, there's a little wheel that turns. And the wheel only turns when the electricity is being used. So if you go up to your flat or wherever it is, you switch the circuit breaker, you go downstairs and you look at the wheel. If that wheel is still turning, then someone is stealing your electricity. And so that, if you're a private person, that's the way to tell.
That's one of the things that I'm hearing is happening. So very, very shrewd advice from circuit breaking expert visiting scholar Will Dunbar. Yesterday, U.S. Ambassador to Georgia Richard Norlin announced that FBI Director Roger Mueller was in Georgia. Officially, the reason is because of the Sochi Olympics. Mueller met with Minister of Internal Affairs Khalibashvili and...
I think he's just going to check on the viruses growing in the...
Now, wait, did you just hear, like, late yesterday, breaking news that that Bidzina made some comments about closing the lab, that giant lab? Yeah, which... would be, I mean, certainly with Mueller here would have been an ill-timed announcement. But yeah, I don't know whether that's true or not.
I did not hear that.
Yeah,
that would be a very weird statement.
That would be an extremely weird statement. But there's certainly, there have been a lot of rumors about all sorts of BS happening relating to the lab, which is silly. I think the Sochi Olympics makes a lot of sense because that's coming up pretty soon.
So the North Caucasus issue might also come up.
Yeah, I kind of think.
The big problem we have here is the intimate connection between the North Caucasus and the Sochi Olympics, in Dagestan and
Sochi being in the North Caucasus and all.
Yeah. The ombudsman statement from
the Lakota Gorge clash, etc.
Yeah. Yes, which was discussed yesterday in my interview with Irakli Alassania about how it's not whatever happened and who knows what happened, but the loose talk about that was not doing anybody any favors.
The semi-informed chatter that Georgia sponsored Chechen.
Particularly coming from the ombudsman who, let's just pay attention to human rights here, rather than what you happen to have heard.
Talk about damaging your political credibility. As the guy that's in charge of defending human rights in this country, it's a really dumb move. But did you see that the bodies of the Chechens, or the alleged Chechens,
or the keys,
whoever they were, have been exhumed and are being examined over the last couple of days. So maybe that will provide some more answers, maybe not.
There's some disagreement among the Georgian Dream Coalition over the Parliament's recent amendments to the Labor Code, which have gone through their first reading. Education Minister Georgi Margvelashvili said that it is skewed in favor of employees and could harm the development of business. Georgian Dream.
He said it was Rosa Luxemburg's ideal labor code, is what he actually said. But the way he said it, he was at Jeepa, where he used to be the rector. So he was, and there was a live stream on the internet, which had about five people watching it. There was about 30, 40 people in the room, his former students and so on. And so he's kind of relaxed. He's just talking among friends. And someone asked the question, and he sort of lets it slip. And some enterprising journalist sort of from Tabula, I think, saw this and was like, "Bing, here's a score." And so then Ted Sulukiani said, "Well, I may be Rosa Luxemburg or not, but I'm still going to pursue this Labour Code in line with our pre-election promises." And so did the Deputy Minister also of Economy, I think, also defended it to the hilt. And then Bidzina, backing up his good friend Georgi, who he called one of the most successful ministers only a couple of weeks ago, backed up.
Although he hasn't really done anything.
Right. He's organising the May 26th parade, non-parade.
Free textbooks.
So Bidzina then backed up Margvelashvili's statement saying, yes, we need to have a 50-50 balance between employees and employers. And in fact, if you read Bidzina's statement, you can read it on civil.g, for instance. If you compare that to Ugalava's statement about Labour Code from before the elections, they're actually weirdly almost word for word the same. So Ugalava, before the election, said, well, obviously we do need to protect workers' rights, but at this stage in Georgia's economy, we need to attract investors, we need to get the economy going, and so, this is why we have a Labour Code like this. And so when you read Bidzina's statement, it goes, we need to protect, there needs to be a balance, but we need to protect employers more than employees because we need investors, and it was just almost exactly the same.
Well, it's really, I think it's silly to talk about this as a, exactly. That's exactly the problem, and I think that there's a tendency to look at it that way, and I disagree, with, for example, Laboratory 1918, and they're saying, we want to move things over to protect the employees because
no one's got a job.
Because no one's got a job, and and you know, and also because the countries that have had a less flexible labor market, UK, Italy is in a real mess with this right now. And a lot of the rest of Europe have had real difficulties there with chronic unemployment in economies that are a lot more liquid than Georgia's. Georgian Dream MP Kovit Davitashvili objected to Mark Velashvili's remarks and said that Mark Velashvili should resign, predictably.
What doesn't he object to?
Right. Well, Kovit Davitashvili also began to gather signatures to hold a referendum on his failed legislative initiative to ban gambling. Davitashvili said that 200,000 signatures are necessary. Now, I have to say, I agree with Davitashvili on this. Now, I don't know about banning all gambling. I think the casinos make a lot of sense. There's a lot of people that come in, especially from Kurdistan these days, but from all over the place.
Turkey, Azerbaijan.
Right, to gamble, and great.
But yeah, the government would have to buy out a lot of hotel operators who built hotels based on the assumption that they have like a tax-free license.
Right, for sure. I have no problem with the casinos. What worries me is
online gambling and the slot machines.
Where, you know,
you can't regulate that. Like, these are not Georgian companies. They're registered in some offshore entity.
You say that you cannot buy the little chits at the little booths, and you get rid of advertising. And just, you know, and it's easy to... I think it's much easier to do that because I see, you know, especially early in the morning, people, often very young people, like buying those little, you know, cards to gamble online. And so, I know a lot of people whose families have lost a lot of money with.
You say you agree with COVID Davitashvili, you actually mean partially.
I mean partially. I don't want to don't put me in the same, you know, whatever. I'm for, you know, whatever type of, you know, like fancy condoms, you know, we're all over the place. Yesterday, Nadia Mogheladze, the head of the political party's monitoring service, resigned. The political party's monitoring service was set up in January of 2012 under the State Audit Office to monitor funds of political parties. Amazingly enough, she was the head of the service since its creation.
This has something to do with the sex tape that we were discussing before. So her husband is a prosecutor, is that right?
Yeah.
Her name has been linked with the case that the sex tape is allegedly released about. So her name has been associated with this case regarding Khashvili and Nasrishvili and so on transferring this company. And she has been named in connection with that, and she has not commented on the reasons for her resignation.
But we don't know if that's actually true.
We don't know if that's actually true. That is
we don't know whether anything we're saying is
actually. Another rumor about that is when the receipts from the presidential administration came out a few weeks ago, that the one speculation was that one bracelet, I think, bought with public funds by the president went to her.
Uh-oh. Last Thursday, the government decided to make the culture ministry responsible for cultural heritage in Tbilisi instead of Tbilisi City Hall. Also, the Ministry of Economy will be responsible for the mountain ski resort of Gudauri instead of Tbilisi City Hall.
Well, I think that's probably... I'm not sure about Gudauri. I don't know the details, but certainly I think that's not a terrible idea in terms of Tbilisi if they can get themselves a decent project together. Save Britain's Heritage, which is a major NGO in the UK, which has done some incredible work, raising millions upon millions of pounds over like a 3-day window to save this country house of Scotland. They're a really great organisation. They have come to Tbilisi. The head of the organisation, honorary head, is Prince Charles. They've come to Tbilisi and they've spoken to the Ministry of Culture. They've looked around, they've seen what's going on, and they want to help. So the Ministry of Culture, what it needs to do is it needs to come up with a sensible plan, not just to preserve individual listed architectural monuments, Gudauri Square, etc., but to come up with a plan to save the fabric of the city, to have protected areas where restoration is required instead of demolition.
To not cut down trees.
Precisely. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, Godspeed the Ministry of Culture. I hope they can do it. I know that the woman in charge... is a very well respected. She's the deputy minister who's in charge of monument protection. She's a very well respected woman whose name escapes me at present. I wish them all the luck in the world in doing this.
There are a collection of really very serious Brits who are particularly looking at this, but a lot of internationals really,
including friend of the show, Peter Naismith.
Exactly, Peter Naismith.
Shout out to him,
and Stephen Nash. But you know, it's really time for, you know, particularly the sort of old Tbilisi, you know, part of town to have a more a better plan for what goes on there, and for people to start obeying the laws in terms of posting demolition orders and that sort of thing, which, for example, the Radisson Hotel has not done in terms of posting the plans in front of it with all the building that it
But that's not the Radisson Hotel.
That's not the Radisson Hotel.
That's the Tbilisi City Hall that builds a new funicular up to the Tatsminda.
That's also a city idea.
So the Tbilisi City Hall is violating the law by not posting that, right?
And you sound surprised. but speaking of cultural heritage, just across the street, we can even see it through our window here, is the Imeli building, the former building of the Institute of Marxism and Leninism, which is this fantastic Soviet neoclassical construction built by the same architect who built Lenin's mausoleum in Moscow. Now, this building was gutted years ago. It's a very sturdy and well-made thing. Stalin knew how to do heavy industry. And it was gutted a few years ago. The roof was taken off. A bit of it was demolished to make way for a Kempinski Hotel, which never happened. It's a scheduled monument, so it's protected by all the laws that you could possibly protect. Misha has weighed in on this. There was various plans for what they're going to do to this, one of which was to build a 20-story tower higher than the Radisson, sort of out the back of it. That got shelved. And so now, if you walk down Rustaveli Avenue today, the Derby Group, which is this United Arab Emirates Georgian Investment Agency, who own the site and have previously been moving around heaps of earth in requirements with the law to make it look like they're working on it.
And have created the most dangerous sidewalk element in Tbilisi.
These guys that have previously been hanging these massive hoardings with these AutoCAD pictures of what it's going to be, what it was going to be was horrible, have now hung a new awning out the front going, reconstructing and restoring the architectural monument Imeli building will begin in May 2013.
So anybody from the go-to guy from the Dahabi group, if you can at least just fix the sidewalk in front of the thing, like the pedestrians of Tbilisi would be very pleased. On Tuesday, TSU and Ilia State University addressed Misha to veto amendments to the civil code, which Parliament approved on the 19th of April. Ilia Uni rector Gigi Tevzadze said that the university's autonomy would be restricted under these changes. He stated, quote, according to the amendments, the government is empowered to change the state university's legal form and to change the private legal entity status into public legal entity status without the permission of the university and its board, end quote. President has not yet signed the amendments.
So basically, this is actually quite interesting. So previously, all the state universities were LEPLs, legal entities of public law, which meant that they were state entities and that the ministry...
But with a large degree of independence,
not that large a degree of independence. So, for instance, the Ministry of Education could impose a new rector. It could force a rector to resign and so on.
The budgetary independence, for example. They get a certain amount of
The amendments that were passed in 2010, which allows universities, if they so choose, to become like NGOs. But NGOs with a sort of slightly different status with still some government regulation. And so many universities chose to do this. It means they're allowed to make a profit, for instance, they run a bookshop or a printing press. Ilia State University, interestingly, hasn't made a profit. In fact, it's messed up its finances royally since then, as a report from the Institute for the Freedom of Information has said. So actually, it's very important that this doesn't happen. And I would also urge Misha to veto these amendments, because if it does become the law that the Ministry of Education can transfer them to LEPLs, it means that Ilia State University, for instance, that guy can get fired. But if the Ministry of Education doesn't like him, he can get rid of him.
Right. And
have a situation where the leading universities in the country can be completely controlled in terms of their academic membership by the Ministry of Education. Yeah. That should not happen.
Right, but it's also not that critical professors haven't been fired in the past for having a political stance. I mean, that is a problem that has been around for a long time, that if you are a professor and you say something, controversial in public, it's not unlikely that you get fired for that.
The prison ministry reports that compared to a year ago, the number of prisoners in penitentiary facilities have been reduced by 57%. As a result of the most recent amnesty, 8,625 prisoners, including 175 designated political prisoners, were released. On Tuesday, Channel One's Director General Gheorghe Baratashvili introduced Sopo Mosidze as the new manager of the press service. Mosidze started her career in Iberovizia TV, worked for TV Mze for many years, and published the journal Episode. Also, Baratashvili denied that the political talk show dialogue with Tato Paichadze and Eko Kasitadze's accents would be closed.
Oh, that's good.
Hope so.
Yeah, because otherwise the public broadcaster would lose even more relevance and viewership.
Yeah, those two are some of the best shows on TV. Real talk shows that sort of get at issues as opposed to.
With hosts that are seen as slightly closer to the United National Movement, but
sure,
that's fine.
No question about it. But also Paichadze, I think he had like two or three different shows, and I think maybe it's going to go down to one or two instead of two or three. Yeah. On the list of Freedom of Press 2013, Georgia was in 96th place under the category Partly Free. This is up from Georgia's 111th place last year, according to the report. Quote, Georgia benefited from increased political diversity in the television market, including the return of Imedi TV to its previous private owners, end quote. The International Humanitarian Organization Save the Children published its 2013 rating for Best and Worst Places to Be a Mother. Georgia is ranked 94th among 176 countries. The Democratic Republic of the Congo is related worst place to give birth. The best, of course, is Finland. Russia's 59th, just in front of Turkey, which is 60th place. Armenia falls 95th, just in front of Georgia. Azerbaijan is 98th. So, Armenians win. According to market research company ACT, in February 2013, 73% of Tbilisi residents used the internet. According to research, 93% of internet users access the internet at home. 64% of Tbilisi population use the internet in order to obtain information. 51% as a means of communication. Only 9% of the population use the internet for business.
I don't think ACT has very good numbers here.
That's what they say. This was it was a phone survey. I can't remember the sample size.
Of 20 people.
No. It was triple digits. I don't think high triple digits. Magdi announced that calls from its network, as far as we understand, I mean, I don't know if there's somebody from Magdi who can help us out here, we'd appreciate it. But as far as we understand, calls from its network, which include Bani, Magdi Fix, Bali, and Magdi, will be limited to 30 minutes for continuous calls. If you're calling from this network and speak on the phone continuously for over 30 minutes, the call will stop automatically.
What?
Prior to this, 90 minutes was a cutoff.
I don't know.
That's madness.
That's what we've heard, so we hope somebody from Magdi will, clarify the situation. This from Tbilpod's own Santa Monica bureau chief. On Sunday, CRI, China Radio International, the state-owned station, launched its 90th overseas radio station in Tbilisi. The Tbilisi station will broadcast 24 hours a day in both English and Georgian. News and music programming will reach an audience of over 2 million. The aim is to promote Sino-Georgian relations. Recent years, CRI has increased its overseas media presence rapidly, launching 90 overseas radio stations in 50 countries to reach an audience of nearly 200 million. CRI's total number of overseas radio stations is the most of any station in the world, and its total number of broadcasting languages is now 64.
I don't think they have a terrestrial license. I mean, I don't know how they broadcast, but I don't think it's a normal radio station.
They're the Chinese, man. They could figure it out.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's talk to Koba Davitashvili and Munmundo Bevis. They've been about this radio station, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the Chinese are doing it right. Sad decline of the United States government trying to engage the hearts and minds.
NPR here. What's your complaint?
Done by like JIPO, which is sort of sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. And
it works though. It works. It's a computer, man.
Yeah, everyone. 93% of Tbilisi residents use the internet. Source information, as we just heard. Yeah, so, click on the link.
that's true. 93%. And now for your parliamentary news update. On Wednesday, Parliament approved Temuraz Shadashanidze as a new Georgian ambassador to Azerbaijan. Besides Shadashanidze, the Parliament approved the new Georgian ambassador to Kazakhstan, Zurab Pataridze, Turkey, Irakli Koplatadze, Lithuania, Khatuna Salakvadze. Kote Kokelia was approved as the permanent representative of Georgia to the Council of Europe. Parliamentary majority summoned Finance Minister Nodar Khaduri to discuss the country's economic situation. On Wednesday, Parliament set up an investigative commission to probe into the activities of the Georgian National Communications Commission. Majority member Tiniko Khidasheli chairs the 12-member commission.
You know what her nickname is?
Oh dear.
Giga Bakary in a skirt.
setting up the commission was initiated by Georgian Dream lawmaker Zudab Khemaladze, chairman of the Committee for Sector Economy. He has said that the parliamentary probe into the GNCC came from complaints received for some communication service provider companies, including Achtel and Achalikselevi.
Yeah, tiny telecommunications companies that are basically owned by a Shevardnadze minister of telecommunications through extremely dodgy offshore entities.
Oh my god, Ingea? Is it
these are Ingea companies.
Freedom Ingea shows
up
again.
But he's hiding his ownership through like Belize companies that if you Google them, you find that they're organized in like involved in organized crime, arms smuggling from Ukraine to Sudan. Like wow. They managed to like make their companies dodgier by using offshore entities. Also, there was a short Freedom of Information request released by IDFI this week that showed the bonuses paid to the members of the Georgian National Communications Commission. So they are already some of the best paid people in the country. I mean, the chairman makes close to 300,000 lari a year.
Wow.
And on top of that, he got some 80,000 lari bonus for not showing up for 6 months. And the other members of this five-member commission also got some 60,000 lari on top of their 200,000 that they already get. So, yeah.
Shocking. Well, I mean, very, very interesting, especially that Khemaladze would be... involved in this, always close to how shall we say the business community.
He's the head of the economics committee in the parliament.
The meme for this week is from the meme hub When You Really Live in Tbilisi.tumblr.com. The last few weeks, the site has gained traction with its Tbilisi focused humor and posts on Facebook. The site features GIFs with titles partly in Georgian, partly in English. For instance, this one. When You Run on Turtle Lake, which was a gif of a man decked out in a green suit, fur coat, and a hat with a feather in it walking slowly on a treadmill. Link will be on the forum. This week's GeoCapital number is 3.8, which is the average Georgian's satisfaction with their household's financial situation on a scale of 1 to 10, according to the World Value Survey. This is the lowest of all countries surveyed. The global average is 5.8, while Russia is at 4.7, Turkey's at 6. The list is topped by Switzerland, where people give their household's financial situation a 7.8 on average. The U.S., it's 5.9, compared with 6.1 for France, 6.7 in Great Britain, 7.1 in Mexico, and 5.9 in China. This week's English language movies, the Roosevelt Valley Movie Theater across from Parliament, are tomorrow, Friday, Oblivion at 7:45. Saturday, May 11th, The Croods at 4 p.m. Tickets are 10 lari, 50 tetri. Kolga movies this week are tomorrow, Friday, Never on Sunday. Oh, from 1960. What do you know? Saturday, May 11th, Everybody's Fine from 1990. Sunday, May 12th, Me and You from 2012. All movies start at 6 p.m. in Domkino across from Rustaveli Metro and McDonald's. Tickets are 7 lari. I think it's 8 p.m., but I'm not sure. You might want to check that. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email address is tbilpod@gmail.com, or post to the forum on our website, tbilpod.com. This week, to celebrate Will Dunbar's leaving the Sam Shoblo soon, we will finish with the only known Abkhaz funk song, Iveria with Azmat.
Deu azamat, hepchis lara fadimat, repchapsa zalimat, daranich kun yaramat.
Haira re rasha, haira gushakwa.
Chepsa bakhchache aksa khacha ruktache amsa yatsur takchache ya inchale dre kharche
hayra re rasha
hayra
gushak.
Chokwayon, Yara Yetran Kayon, Rep Hamsa Akayon, Taranis Kunga Sayon.
Hi, Rare Rasha. Hi, Ragusha.